translation usually put in there. It's probably the most common command in Scripture. Probably occurs more in Scripture than any other command that God ever gave. And yet, it's an interesting command because he doesn't appear to be saying, never have fear. He seems to be saying you need to overcome fear and to put it away. Because we see lots of people be afraid. It even appears as if Jesus is a bit afraid of going to the cross the night before when he's about to be crucified. And also fear is a natural response of the body. It is not it's not unusual. Everybody has it. In fact, it is one of those powerful forces that drive a lot of behavior in people. It is really a fleshly desire. Okay, we have built into us a lot of fleshly desires. We have a desire to eat and drink, right? We have desire for sex. We have a lot of desires that drive us. God teaches us in all of them, though, that to not let those desires rule over us. We can't let them drive us. We can't let them control us. Fear is much like that, because fear is really your body's mechanism for self-preservation. In fact, I had been doing a lot of reading about fear for the last couple of months in anticipation of talking about it, and I wanted to talk about it in a way that wasn't just telling people to not be afraid. And I don't know, you probably all, as parents or even as a kid, you had a little bit of fear of something and somebody told you to not be afraid, right? They might even have told you there's nothing to be afraid of. But the truth is, when you have fear of something, very often there is something to be afraid of. It's not nothing to be afraid of. I have a good friend. In fact, maybe even some here have done it. I have a good friend whose daughter, she reached about 15 and a half, could start taking, you know, driver's ed. She didn't want to. Hit 16, didn't want to drive. She didn't start driving until she was 18. And even then, did it with a lot of fear. She was afraid she would kill somebody or be killed when she was 16. Now, most other 16-year-olds would go, oh, that's stupid. Get your driver's license. Get some freedom. There's nothing to be afraid of. And yet, if they're really smart, they would have been told, okay, in the first 6 months you're driving, this is the time to be most afraid because you're the most dangerous driver in the planet. And so we don't tell people that, right? You know, like we don't rationalize fear and go, well, yeah, the percentage, most of us all drove here, right? We drove here in a car. I don't think anybody walked when I look around. The chances of you dying when you got in the car to drive here today is real. Regardless of what you do, it could be somebody else. It's really tiny, but it's still there. But I had a grandmother, I think it was my grandmother, who broke her hip stepping off a curb. And that broken hip, she died from. Because it cracked, bled, she got sepsis, she died. Broken hips are a very common way for people to die. They can't reset them, they can't really fix them. It often creates an infection in the body that causes people to die. Really common. Should we tell it don't step off curbs? Right? It's not that it never happens, but the chances of it happening are small. You take, well, it could, and think about it for a moment. If we were to take away every chance you could die, and you just sat in your room in a nice cushioned room, all the walls, floor, everything is cushioned for you, and you didn't have to do anything, what are the chances you're going to die? You might just be killing yourself sooner because if you don't do anything, you're not going to live as long. You're not going to be as healthy. So everything we do has some risk in it. In fact, I think it was Forrest back over there. I remember it was a couple weeks ago. got the little picture of he was driving along. I don't know why this happens to Forrest more than most, but he finds more accidents right near him than anybody else I've known. And I think Idaho Power had a contractor who didn't hook up their trailer very well, and he's driving along, and the trailer came off of the truck, big trailer, not a little trailer, big trailer, and went flying across the road in front of him. I don't know how far in front of him, but he took pictures of it, called Idaho Power, and said, you barely ought to be able to fix some of these people towing your trailers, make sure they hook up their trailers right. Just driving down the road. I think he was going to work, remember, right? And he had no control over that, no power over that. Could we be afraid of that? Sure. Now, I could tell my daughter to not be afraid of spiders. Is there really no fear of spiders? I don't have fear of spiders. I see spiders, I don't like them, so I just kill them. I kill them with my fingers all the time. I don't go get tissue. I just kill it. That's what I do with spiders. I don't have fear of spiders. I do know that some of them can really hurt you if not die from. But it doesn't bother me. But she was like 4 years old in a little, you know, Barbie playhouse or something. And saw a big black widow spider, which apparently was about this big, and thought it was going to kill her. So she has a phobia now. Her fear has grown beyond the natural fear. And I'm going to talk a little bit about natural fear versus phobia. I was watching a podcast of a scientist who studied fear. And apparently he's done a lot of he did most of the research behind the idea of the amygdala being the fear center. And in this podcast, he described the fact that a lot of people took his research and kind of came to conclusions that weren't really accurate. Well, that's unusual, right? He kind of didn't fight it too much because people, the amygdala in your brain is the fear center. He goes, well, that's not completely accurate. It's sort of accurate, not completely accurate. It is the body's mechanism that causes flight and the flight or fight response. Right? So it causes all that limbic system, the adrenal system, all to kick into gear, and you're either going to run or you're going to stand and fight. And it's what causes that reaction. It's not what causes fear, though. Fear is actually much more in our brain. And he did more studies. It showed that even when you remove the amygdala reaction, people still have fear. Because once we've kind of known, we have memory of fear. We think about things that are fearful. And so we don't just have a real simple fear mechanism. We have a complex fear mechanism. And fear can sometimes override common sense. So I don't want to just pick on my daughter's fear of spiders, which I used only because I know a lot of other people have it too, and I kind of saw it in your faces as I talked about it. But I have fear of rodents, specifically mice and rats. I have a phobia of them, and it goes back to experiences I had as a kid as well. And they're irrational, but I have them. They're real. It's like I know I can't stop the reaction of rodents, and you know, my wife and daughter and, you know, animals have taken care of mice. I don't do it. If I had mice in my house and there wasn't somebody around to take care of it, I'm calling somebody. I have an irrational fear of mice. I know where it comes from. I know I could tell you all the stories about it. But it's funny because a lot of people have them as pets. I'd feed them to a snake, personally. But that's a fear, and it's set into the brain. It's set into the memory. It started as a physical reaction of the body, but your body remembered that fear. And then it began to react to that fear. And then it began to avoid that fear. And so God, I think, understands the fear reaction in us. He created it in us. It was created to help us survive. He's not, and so when he tells us to not be afraid, all the different places he does that, to be courageous and to not be afraid, is to overcome the fear. Don't let fear rule over you. Don't become a slave to it. And so what I want to do this morning is kind of an overview. I have a lot of stuff I'd like to maybe look at in some future weeks, but I thought I would start with really just looking at Matthew chapter 10, when Jesus sent out the 12 apostles. And in this commission, which you might be somewhat familiar with, he talks about fear. He talks about reasons to be afraid. And so let's kind of look at that. And I kind of gave it a title when he sends out the 12. There is a time to flee and there is a time to stand. I think even Rich, when I was talking about Thursday night a little bit with Dave and Rich, I think Rich said, oh, I think, is that in Ecclesiastes 3 there? Well, I actually went back and looked, like, is that there? I don't think so. I mean, maybe it's so. It's like, that sounds like it should be there. There's a time to be born, a time to die. There's a time to run away, and there's a time to fight. Sounds like it ought to be there. It's not, but it sounds like it should be there. And so, in reality, Jesus says that here. He actually tells them that there is a time to run away, and there is a time to stand and fight it. And it takes judgment to know which to do. But here's the biggest point, and I already kind of said it, is that whether you run away or whether you stand, the decision to do either should not be based upon your fear, but upon what's the best and right thing to do. I don't know if that, does that make sense? You need to, is it the right time to not fight right now? Give you another sentence. People like to use, became real popular in a lot of different ways, but especially like parents raising children. Is this the hill you want to die on, right? You're going to battle your kids. They're not going to want to eat their carrots, and you fed them carrots, and like, hey, is this the hill? Is this a thing that you sit there and make them do to, you know, and they can't leave the table till they've finished all their carrots? Or is this the battle you don't want to fight? It's like, okay, this one's not worth it. At some point, there's going to come a battle with your kids. It's worth it. That you have to stand and you got to say, no, you have to do what I say. I don't care what you think. You have to do what I say. You have to obey. There's a time that has to happen. Is every time that, though? No. It's like it's not time to die on every hill. Sometimes when troops are fighting, sometimes you run. So this is not a good setup. We got to get away so we can fight another day. Another old kind of human proverb. You got to live so we can fight another time, because this one isn't worth it. But we can't let fear rule over us. And I look out in the world, and I don't know that most of us have fallen into that, but I look around at the world during this pandemic. And the pandemic, by the way, isn't anything new. Nothing happened in the pandemic that hasn't been happening to human beings from the beginning of time. Maybe it was a little bigger than some, but there's always been the danger of dying. And the vast majority of older people who have died in the last year from this virus, a lot of them would have died getting the flu, because the flu would have caused pneumonia, because a lot of the COVID patients died of pneumonia. And so it was new, and yet not new. We've had worse pandemics in the world. But you see how much fear, especially in people who aren't looking forward to heaven, who think that this is it. I mean, if life's over as soon as my flesh dies, then I'm really afraid of dying, right? More than others. And one of the reasons why God is telling us to not be afraid is because you and I, as Christians, should not be afraid of dying. I saw a friend shared a meme on Facebook. I saw, I think, yesterday. He said, Don't be afraid of dying. And I'm not saying it exactly right. But don't be afraid of dying, because you're going to. What you need to be worried about is location, location, location. And in reality, why it's funny is because, yeah, that's really kind of true, isn't it? We want to be with God. We don't want to be separated from God when we die. And we're all going to die. One fashion or another, at one time or another, with so many days or more days or less days. Lots of righteous people have lived long lives, and a lot of righteous people have lived short lives. There's no guarantee. You know, if you live long lives, you have a long thing, that doesn't make you better. Short doesn't make you better. I mean, it just is. It's the reality of existence in this world. And he's telling us to not be afraid of it, because he has overcome death. And he's overcome it for us so that you and I can be courageous no matter what is in our way, so that we can go and do the things that are godly. And specifically, in fact, I'll probably talk about a little bit more in the future, but I mentioned a while back, I think in some writings I did on our website and stuff, or on our daily things, you know, the concept of nursing comes from Christianity in the early centuries. And the idea, Christians faced death to take care of sick people, when all of the Roman culture, what they did when their family members got sick is kick them out. Not every kind of sickness, but a lot of sicknesses that you're out. That you have to stay away, they would kill you. So you had these leper colonies and other kind of sick colonies. And from the Roman society, they wouldn't have anything to do with them. And the only people who took care of them in the second and third, even fourth centuries, were Christians. And you know what? A lot of the Christians died from those things. But they kept doing it anyway. They took care of sick and ailing people, even to the detriment of their own bodies and their own life, because they had hope and they had the glory waiting for them. And so they were going to be servants of the people who were the most in need. That's what those early Christians did. And in fact, the doing what they did in caring for the sick and the needy, and not in terms of fighting with swords, and that's what ultimately overcame the Roman Empire's hatred, not fighting. They didn't go to war. They didn't battle with any kind of weapons. They overcame Rome's enmity by their service to the lowest and weakest and sickest and poorest amongst us all. And we sometimes forget that is really the characteristics of Christianity. And so let's look here and just kind of give you a little bit of an overview. So I'm going to read some of this, but not necessarily all of it. In verses 5 through 15, just kind of an overview, Jesus tells them to go proclaim or preach the kingdom. It's nearby, it's at hand. He told them to heal the sick and do miracles. Give what you have been given. Basically, he tells them to go out and don't charge anybody for what you're going to teach, because you weren't charged for what you were given. So you go out and you give and you help, because you've been helped. Bring your peace to them. And if they won't listen, move on. That's essentially the first part of what he tells them when he tells them to send them out. So he says, let me read that. He says, when he was sending them out, he instructed them, go nowhere among the Gentiles, enter no town of the Samaritans, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. By the way, that statement, I didn't realize it till yesterday. But this instructions, which by the way are not just about this particular moment, he's going to refer to a bunch of stuff that happens later and not at this time. this instructions is part of the reason they needed to be instructed to go to the Gentiles later. Because they had been instructed to not go to the Gentiles by Jesus. And so he says, and proclaim as you go, saying the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse lepers, cast out demons. You received without paying, give without pay. Acquire no gold or silver or copper for your belts, no bag for your journey, or two tunics or sandals or staff, for the laborer deserves his food. He basically said, you're not going to charge them, but you're not going to take any money. You're going to help have them support you when you go to the house of Israel. By the way, some of those instructions change. When he sent them out into the world, he did tell them to take two tunics. He did tell them to take money. So he tells them, whatever town or village you enter, find who is worthy in it, and stay there until you depart. And as you enter the house, greet it. And if the house is worthy, let your peace come upon it. But if it is not worthy, let your peace return to you. And if anyone will not receive you or listen to your words, shake off the dust from your feet when you leave that house or town. Truly, I say to you, it shall be more bearable on the day of judgment for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah than for that town. By the way, the shaking off the dust against them is a reference to judgment. It's an Old Testament concept. It's not just leave, but I kind of was just trying to help us understand the general thing. He's telling them to go out and preach, go and do these miracles, heal people, give to them what you have, let them support you, but don't charge them for things. And then, when they won't listen, you move on. But then he tells them that persecution's going to come. You're going to have some tough times. And so in 16 to 25, he's told them, you're going to be persecuted. They're going to try you and they're going to flog you, but don't be anxious about defending yourself because God will give you those words. They will hate you just like they did the master. When they persecute you, flee. He told them to run away. Now, I'm going to next week probably talk to you about this some more, the fleeing part, because I have a lot more scriptures about this. So what he tells them is, look, I'm sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves, so be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. Beware of men, for they will deliver you over to courts and flog you in their synagogues. That doesn't appear to be a statement more about this moment, this particular sending out, but more long term. All of the conflict they're going to face, especially Paul. How often was he flogged or beaten? And these things he's talking about, they were down the road for most of them. And he says, you'll be dragged before governors and kings for my sake. We're not aware of any of these things really happening in this particular moment. They did come later, though. And he says, you're going to bear witness before them and the Gentiles. When they deliver you over, do not be anxious how you are to speak or what you are to say. For what you are to say will be given to you in that hour. For it is not you who speak, but the Spirit of your Father speaking through you. Brother will deliver brother over to death, and the father his child. And children will rise against parents and have them put to death. And you will be hated by all for my name's sake. But the one who endures to the end will be saved. When they persecute you in one town, flee to the next. For truly I say to you, you will have not gone through all the towns of Israel before the Son of Man comes. A disciple is not above his teacher, nor a servant above his master. It is enough for the disciple to be like his teacher, and the servant like his master. For if they have called the master of the house Beelzebub, Lord of the flies, essentially, how much more will they malign those of his household? So if they called me this derogatory name, they're going to call you it too. Now, he went on and he said, don't be afraid. So here he just told them they're going to persecute you, which what's the natural response to people coming and saying, we're going to arrest you and we're going to beat you? You're afraid, right? Everybody would be afraid. It's the natural response. Now, some people fight that fear. When that fear comes, they want to fight. Other people got to run. And he's already told them, When that persecution comes, run away. Go to the next town. But don't be afraid. Have no fear. So the very next sentence in verse 26 is, so have no fear of them. Even though he told them to flee, he also told them to not be afraid of them. So you're not running away because you're afraid. You're running away because they didn't want to listen, and you're going to go to the next town and preach to them. Okay. Now he said, for nothing is covered that will not be revealed, or hidden that will not be known. What I tell you in the dark, say in the light. What you hear whispered, proclaim on the housetops. And do not fear those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. And this is the thing that's happened in the pandemic, for sure, is we're only afraid of something that can kill the body. It has no power over your soul. And it doesn't mean that it's not fearful. It's not something that causes fear, right? I mean, none of us like the idea of getting sick. The fear that happens, I remember both times, you know, we have been told, first time back in 2018, when we were told Julie had cancer, nobody likes hearing that phrase. It is a fearful phrase. We got told it on like 5 o'clock on Friday night. It was great because now you got 2 days to kind of sit through, figure. You know, they don't tell you anything. They don't tell you what they're going to do. They don't tell them next steps are. You know, like that comes next week. They're like, don't worry about it for the weekend. Okay, we just told you have cancer, but we're going to tell you not to worry about it. Well, it doesn't really happen. You're going to worry about it. You're going to be afraid. That's what happens. When we were told the cancer returned last year, same thing happened. Told like 5:30 on a Friday night. And so I'm kind of glad because she was supposed to go back to work on Monday, and I called the company and said, she's done. You know, she won't be in Monday. We got other things to deal with. But, you know, sat through it for a whole weekend, you know, just dealing with that response, that fear response. But then you have to do something, right? Are you going to, do you run away from it? Do you do nothing? Do you fight it? It's like, that's why people talk about fighting cancer all the time. You don't really fight cancer. Not a real sense. But why they talk about it is because trying to get mentally ready for the battle. Because it's going to be a battle. It is a battle. You know, it's a battle a lot of people lose. You know, some people win, but a lot don't. But it's not a real fight. You're not sitting there, you know, punching some cells. You know, you're hoping medicine works, but if it doesn't, there's not much you can do about it. You know, but it's a mindset. Am I ready to battle? Am I ready to do the things that need to be done even when they're hard? Because that's what fighting really, you know, is about, standing up and facing it. To not be afraid. Well, the best thing about cancer for a Christian is it's still fearful. But it's not as fearful because we know life goes on. And so he's saying, don't be afraid of those who can kill the body. And so obviously he was talking about people and those who are persecuting them. But it's everything. Don't be afraid of all the stuff that might kill you in this world. There's a lot of stuff that might kill you. A lot more stuff than we'd like to know about. It's like, don't ask questions about what's in hot dogs if you don't want to know the answer. So, if you're too worried about what's in hot dogs, you probably shouldn't eat them. So, we're going to die of something, and so don't be afraid of the things that might kill the body. Fear him who can destroy both. Remember how much value God has for you, and don't be afraid. Remember and acknowledge Jesus. That's what he's telling them. Have no fear of them, for nothing is covered that will not be revealed, or hidden that will not be known. I already kind of read most of this. But he goes on, Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? And not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father. And he basically says is, there is no animal that dies that your God, that our God does not know about. And you're more important to him than any of those animals. And so he says, but even the hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear not. Therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows. So everyone who acknowledges me before men, I also acknowledge before my Father who is in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, I also will deny before my Father who is in heaven. Now, this final section. So don't be afraid. Because remember, Jesus came to bring peace on earth, right? Jesus is a peace offering. At his birth, talks about peace has come to the earth. But he tells us here, don't be deceived in thinking I came to bring peace amongst all the people. Jesus was God's peace offering to us. But Jesus didn't come so that all people could just have peace and have kumbaya with each other. He said, whoever receives you, he says, whoever receives you receives me, and whoever receives me receives him who sent me. The one who receives a prophet, I reading the wrong place. Verse 34, do not think that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to set a man against his father, and a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and a person's enemies will be those of his own household. Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Whoever does not take his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. And I'm going to show you examples of a lot of this stuff that he's talking about later in the coming weeks. But this last part is really important. He said, in my overview, don't think he came to bring peace, but conflict. He came to bring peace to us who follow him, but we're going to have conflict with those who do not follow him, even when they're in our household. You can't change that. And he says, if you try to save your life, fleshly life, you're going to lose it. But if you stand up for Jesus' sake and lose your life, even causing death of the body, you will save it. The way to have real life is to stand up and to not be afraid of this world, but to have fear of God and to do those things God would want us to do in all those circumstances. So whether we run or whether we fight, we do either one because we think God's way is that way. There are times when Jesus ran. And there's a time when he stayed and fought. There's a time when Peter ran, and there's a time when he stayed and fought. There's a time when Paul ran, and there's a time when he stayed and fought. And the same is true, we can go all through the Old Testament as well. Over and over and over again, there is a time to run, to live another day, to fight another fight, and there is a time to stand, even if it costs you your life. And I don't always know what the answer to those are. That's why I said, I'm not trying to come up with some easy answer about fear, whether the fear of sickness or anything else. I don't know that there's always a simple or easy answer to it. But whatever the answer is, we need to do it for God. If that makes sense. I hope that makes sense to everybody. We're going to look at this a little bit more detail in at least a couple more weeks. So I appreciate everybody's time here this morning. I'll expand upon some of this next week and probably on the fleeing part, when to run. And we'll look at some more passages about that. And we'll look at some examples of that, about that. So we're going to end here this morning. We're going to sing Psalm 47 in the supplement, right? That one. It'll be up overhead as well, but we're going to sing that just to close out this particular portion of the assembly. And we just want to always encourage everybody to get in touch with us, the elders, the deacons, any member. If we can help, we will help in any way we can. If we're able, we want to. And we want to serve, we want to take care of each other, we want to help each other. And so if you're in need of any of those things, please reach out to us and please seek our help if we can be helpful. We'll go ahead and stand and sing at this time.